Hello, comrades, and welcome back to another episode of Spectre, Season 4, Episode 2. I'm delighted today to be joined by Alex and Rory from the Safe Consumption Campaign in Edinburgh. Guys, it's a pleasure to have you today.
No, cheers. Thank you for inviting us on, Nathan. I'm very happy to be here. It's an important issue to be talking about, and I'm just glad it's getting the attention it deserves after such a long time.
Cheers.
Thank you for having us on, Nathan. It's a pleasure.
No, absolutely delighted. So I guess just to first start off with, you know, you guys, just a wee introduction from yourselves, you know, who you are, your affiliations and everything else in between.
Aye, so if you're happy for me to go first, Sander, I'm Rory. I've been involved in the campaign for a few years now. And my involvement, I mean, it effectively stands for personal reasons, honestly. There's a lot of people involved in the campaign over in Edinburgh and different campaigns like this across the country that, you know, effectively involved because, you know, they've got friends, family, you know, people in their community that have died due to the drugs crisis. It doesn't seem to be getting any better in the country. And, you know, I had quite a few pals from school that went through drugs issues. I had one that died, and that's part of the reason I got involved, but also just my involvement. I work for a trade union. I've been doing a lot of work for Live and Rent, Scotland's tenants and community union, over the past few years as well. And just, you know, people need to get involved, do the work if they want things to change in this country. And there's a lot of things to change about Scotland and make it better. So, no,
Yeah, I'm
cheers.
Alexander. I joined the YCL in September, and I was delighted to hear that we were involved in a safe consumption facility campaign in Edinburgh. I did see that it was going on in Glasgow, but it is needed in all cities across Scotland. And it's been one of the best decisions I've made joining since September, and I'm happy to be learning along the way.
No, cheers, guys. Thanks for that. And I guess just kind of diving straight into it before we even, you know, begin to talk about safe consumption in itself, it's obviously important to look at the very extent of Scotland's drug crisis. Historically, we know certain areas of Scotland have been more plagued than others. So just to see if you can give us a wee insight into what extent is the drug crisis currently in Scotland and, you know, where do we find ourselves with it?
So, Scotland at this stage, you know, it's had a long and tough battle with drugs, probably going back to the start of the 1980s, where it started to get really bad through the increased deindustrialisation, which was brought about by Thatcher's policies, which ended up bringing about mass unemployment and poverty. And also at this time, subsequently, opium was coming from Afghanistan and the Middle East, which was being made into heroin, which is probably the first drug that really took a hold of Scotland. And it began to take a hold of communities. It's something that Scotland has failed time and time again to shake off through the failures to properly combat poverty. And this has obviously subsequently resulted in Scotland now having the highest drug death rate in Europe, which everyone knows.
Aye, exactly. I mean, as Xander says, the drugs crisis in Edinburgh and in Scotland, it's, you know, historical. Everyone knows. You speak to anyone in the street, you speak to politicians even, and everyone is aware that Scotland is the drug capital of Europe, that Glasgow is the drug capital of Scotland, and that the drug crisis has been going on for decades and decades. And there's a lot of solutions, but, you know, the deaths continue, the poverty continues, the deprivation of, you know, every single community across Scotland, particularly those faced by this issue, continues. And that just lack of action by, you know, I'm sure we'll get into it, by our political leaders, by, you know, the folks that kind of control the councils and local governments, and both the UK and Scottish Parliament don't seem to do much action on it. But, you know, as Xander's touched on, at the base of it, it's, you know, it's poverty, it's deprivation. You know, just last year, 1,172 people died due to a drug-related, you know, death in Scotland. That's 1,172, not just people, that's families of those people, that's friends, that's, you know, entire communities affected by those losses. These aren't just, you know, forgotten people and forgotten numbers that are swept under the rug as much as the political classes of this country would, you know, like it to be that way. That was up over 120 from the previous 12 months. That's an over 12% increase. You know, drug death rates, both in Edinburgh, in Scotland, they have got worse and worse and worse over the past decade. Edinburgh's significantly worse than it was a decade ago, and we've now got an NHS which isn't only struggling from underfunding, it's also straining from the weight of those that are in dire need of care, that are overburdened by those who've suffered from needless and preventable overdoses. We're the sixth richest nation on the planet, but I don't know, it's not been noticed that much, but we're the sixth richest nation on the planet, and there's actually been an embarrassing increase of HIV positive adults through what is primarily the preventable sharing of needles in Scotland as well. And again, for one of the richest countries on earth, for the second effectively richest city in the UK, it's embarrassing for our political leaders, but it's also dire for the communities that live it day by day.
Yeah, no, that's a great roundup, and the underpinning of that is that class aspect and poverty. My partner does similar work, and the repeated stories are those who are already either on universal credit or other forms of benefits who are just almost in a sense abandoned by the system. So many of the actual social workers or those in smaller government don't want anything to do with users. They're seemingly just a burden to be bared, and that just affects people who are trying their absolute hardest to overcome their addiction and get their life on track for how they want to progress and provide for their loved ones as well. It just makes that situation all too hard. And we're talking about the drug crisis kind of as a whole, and Alex, you gave us a kind of brief rundown on historically the situation in the likes of Edinburgh. But what can we see is the situation now in Edinburgh? Rory, you've obviously touched on the aspect of the contradiction between Britain's vast wealth and the problems that we're experiencing now, along with a rise in cases of HIV. So what is the situation in Edinburgh as it continues to seemingly spiral out of control?
Well, obviously, Edinburgh's always had a history of HIV. In areas like Moorhouse in North Edinburgh, and other drug hotspots like Leith and Niddrie and Galway. But over time, what you've seen is essentially the stigmatisation of these areas that have been branded as no-go zones. And they've been abandoned by the council and the government. The swathes of housing being abandoned and left to rot. No state care for them or the wider community. And, they've been destroyed, these communities, many of them. But also, what you've seen in these areas as well is just rampant gentrification and wider anti-working class policy from the council and government in Edinburgh, where essentially their implicit solution to poverty has essentially been the takeover of private interests, which has seen changes in areas like Leith, Southside, and Gorgie, which are traditionally working class areas, but they also still suffer from problem drug use. And so this sort of prioritisation of private interests and profits over that of the community, it just is destructive, and it shows a disregard for working class communities in Edinburgh. These are communities that have accommodated immigrants and refugees. They're normal areas, but they've been completely abandoned, basically. And to touch on gentrification, like it's these sort of areas, they're fully coffee shops, they're fully business. The fully cycle lanes, low traffic areas, but when it comes to working class issues, there's no sort of regard or interest. It's taken normal people to actually go out and campaign for it, to actually get the council to listen to these things. So I think that gentrification is a vital aspect to touch on in a city like Edinburgh, which attracts so much tourism, attracts so much wealth as well from this. You've got so many Airbnbs in there in the city centre. Especially during the festival. But when it comes to working class issues, it's the complete opposite. So it's a complete contradiction. And that results in these problem drug users, they're further excluded because their interests aren't being listened to. They're isolated, and that isolation is sort of why they end up with these addictions in the first place. And that is why a safe consumption facility is so important, because it allows for some semblance of integration back into society for people that have been marginalised for decades.
Yeah, perfect. Cheers for that, Alex. Rory, is there anything you want to add in on that?
No, I mean, as Xander says, that's pretty much the perfect clear-cut answer to it. It is that contradiction, particularly so in Edinburgh, and I'm sure people will be thinking about the comparisons to Glasgow. Glasgow's just got its first safe consumption facility kind of underway in the last month, effectively, after again lots and lots of delays and a lot of action by, local community members that have put in a lot of hard graft to get to the stage that Glasgow's at. And we'll go into it. There's a lot of different models of safe consumption facilities, but the actual root of all the root of the drugs crisis, at the root of people dying due to drugs, is that it's that chronic underfunding. People look at Edinburgh and it is an intensely rich city. It is one where the centre is usually, pick, clean a litter, as Xander goes into. There's a lot of good things. It's got a fantastic public transport system. It's got good housing if you don't go into the neighbourhoods that the council don't want you to. But it's a city with a mass amount of tourism. It's a city with a mass amount of money. But from that money, Edinburgh, pretty much over the last kind of decade or so, has faced over 250 million in cuts. That's youth programs gone. That's mental health support gone. That's housing gone and made worse. That's addiction services that have had to close down. That's community groups that would have offered that support. And I think Alex, kind of hit it on the head. At the actual root of this, it's isolation. That's the key issue for most people, that are faced with kind of substance abuse of any kind. It's the isolation that grows day by day because you're cut off from your housing, because you're cut off from your healthcare, because eventually you're also cut off from your family and your friends. Your mental health gets worse. You don't have a place to stay. And in a city where the funding is there, but it isn't there for Edinburgh's working classes. It's cut day by day, budget by budget. It was only this week that Edinburgh's budget was announced, and it's another budget like Glasgow, like Dundee, like every single community across Scotland, where community services are going to be cut again, and that only worsens that isolation. And the richer this country gets, the more angry people feel.
Yeah, spot on. And obviously, you're saying there about the budget being set for Edinburgh Council. Obviously, yourselves and the likes of Unite were out at the demonstration just the other day. And the trends that we're seeing across councils, whether it be in Glasgow, Edinburgh, and other places in Scotland, is that continuing selling off of public resources to private enterprise, taking everything away from working people for whatever little that we have left, being constantly robbed off us. And Alex, you're touching on the kind of aspect of gentrification. I think that does play a massive role in the kind of friction that we see between looking at the Marxist lens of framing, the proletariat and what would be classified as a lumpen proletariat. And we're too busy fighting between ourselves to, pinpoint our anger in that direction. And it is that direction of privatization of these big landlord classes continue to buy up property to price people out because although work might be done to improve the quote value of an area, that value becomes too unstable for folk to, keep their rent up, their mortgages rise. And they're pushed out and fighting for accommodation either in the actual city centre itself or forced outside it. And that leaves us all fighting together for basic housing when you look at the likes of assisted accommodation and all that for people who are suffering from addiction. There's very little of that being made. The struggles for spaces and the actual funding within itself, and the councils have a lot to answer for on that, and this just exacerbates the problem further and further. So I think it was great that your campaign was addressing that issue specifically alongside the trade unions at the council meeting to, recognise that. And
I think, obviously, if you want to touch on the drug use itself and why it's in Edinburgh, why it's getting so bad is obviously, and across the UK as well, it's the increasing presence of these synthetic opioids, the likes of fentanyl and nitazenes, which are actually being cut into heroin. Either that or the problem drug users are using them alongside these substances. And also, the cocaine injections in Edinburgh has also spiraled out of control. I actually read that there's more people injecting cocaine in Edinburgh than heroin. And it isn't even the sort of what is deemed sort of the normal cocaine. It's prop, which is stronger, which makes it more dangerous, which is why this sort of need for a safe consumption facility is stronger than ever.
I think the kind of changes in drug habits and the types of drugs as well. There's so many when you're speaking to those who work in addiction, the rise of these kind of more dangerous forms of pills that certain strains of Xanax and all that are being flooded in. You continuously hear stories of people who are for lack of a better term, seasoned drug users who are overdosing and even small quantities of it just because of the nature of the drug and the purity or the well, depending on how it's cut, the poison of it. This combined as well with the likes the minimum unit alcohol pricing you're seeing and hearing stories of people who drink what would be their go to every single day. It's now too expensive for them, so now they're looking for cheaper alternatives, and it does come in these more dangerous forms of drugs and tablets that are a cause of so many overdoses. And like you kind of said, Rory, about the NHS and how it's not going to cope with this, and it isn't coping with it. It's just becoming a trend across the board, even for basic services. It's already on its knees enough, never mind dealing with this. So I th think those changing drug habits and pricing and everything plays a factor into that. Yeah, I guess looking at the question that always comes to this when talking about either safe consumption, the decriminalisation of drugs, or just the drug problem in general, it's always looking to say, what is the solution for us? It might seem simple enough, and certainly within the political framework at Holyrood, it's driven to be a much more complicated matter than what is needed. But obviously, we know there's a reason for that. But just looking to come to you guys to see if you can vocalise from your campaign what you see as a solution to this drug crisis.
Aye, so I mean, it's as it says on the tin, it's the name of the campaign. It's for one, it is safe consumption facilities, but this is the thing the campaign's really driving forward is that, safe consumption facilities is, the starting point. It's the most achievable thing that we can get to right now. And that's been proven by the campaign. The campaign's only ran for a few years, and it's a reality that's changed in 5, 10 years. If you go back 10 years, safe consumption facilities, there wasn't that much knowledge of them. Even 5 years ago, there was very much a line that was put out by the Scottish Government, by a lot of the kind of, ruling councils at the time, that safe consumption facilities, aye, they might help, but they're not going to be possible in Scotland. They're not going to be possible in the UK because of UK-wide drug law. And in the last 5 years, it's not just purely due to this campaign. Obviously, there's been fantastic campaigning from different community groups in Glasgow, Peter Craigen kind of foremost amongst them, and a lot of different charities, organisations, and just communities that have fought on this issue. And the wider answer to that question is, it's recovery. It's moving from what has been historically in Scotland and the UK, a criminal justice approach, to drugs issues where, communities have effectively, as Xander said earlier, through Thatcherism, through neoliberalism, whatever you want to call it, through capitalism, to be convinced that, your neighbour who might be suffering from a drug issue, that, they're your enemy. You need to call the police on them if they're, doing anything in the stairwell, or, if you see anyone like that, that it's a criminal justice issue. And it's not, it's that's our friends, that's our family, that's our community, and they need support. And it's that draining of the NHS, it's that draining of community services, it's that growing isolation that's meant that there's more and more people facing this issue. And as they're kind of driven away into, alleys, into anywhere else that, isn't kind of a safe place to take drugs, that the safety of it's getting worse. Effectively, for us, the first step to that solution from moving towards from a criminal justice approach to a public health approach to something that's based on recovery, is a safe consumption facility. At a complete base level, a safe consumption facility, it's a brick and mortar building where anyone with substance abuse, with drug abuse, they can go there, they can take pre-obtained drugs and go into that building, and it reduces the risk of overdose, but it also allows for kind of safer injecting practices. Those aren't buildings that are unstaffed. There would be professional staff in there that are trained, that have the expertise, that have the knowledge to be able to deal with overdoses if they're there, but also have the ability to test any drugs coming in just to ensure that everything's done safely, and also ensure safe injecting practices, get out clean needles, stop that increase in HIV, et cetera, et cetera. But, that's just harm reduction, and harm reduction is only one part of the fight. The main part of the fight is recovery. And that's getting people on the route to recovery. And that's, again, from that lack of housing, that lack of healthcare, that drive towards our community services being butchered and people going into isolation so heavily that we can't reach them. The people that will run these services, and you know, these need to be good trade union jobs that are well paid, that are well supported, and this is a point I'll make later, but it's why it can't just be done by the third sector or the charity sector, because they're the ones directly affected by that chronic underfunding and, you know, attack on funding from local governments and councils and even the Scottish government kind of across the country. You know, it needs to be, there needs to be safeguards in place to ensure that those are well-paid jobs, and not only well-paid jobs so that people have the expertise and the knowledge to be able to deal with these things, but also with the compassion, you know, a compassionate approach to get people to be able to talk to people, find out what their issues are. Because as Xander went into, it's not only the, you know, the type of drugs that people are taking that will, you know, affect these issues compared to Glasgow, compared to Edinburgh, compared to Dundee and other places. It's not just where they're taken and how they're taken, it's also how people got to this stage. In Edinburgh, at least, and this is a wee bit different from other cities, substance misuse is one of the biggest drivers of homelessness. And homelessness is one of the biggest issues we've got in Edinburgh. And getting people access to housing, to healthcare, as I've mentioned, to wider welfare, and also just getting people on the route to recovery is the really, really key thing. You know, it's partially about safety, it's partially about destigmatization, but it's also primarily about material solutions to this problem.
Yeah, spot on, Rory, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there when talking about that compassionate approach, because ultimately, you know, these people are in effect, you know, victims. They continue to be victimized, you know, on both sides of the fence. When you speak to those working in addiction, they'll be able to tell you for a fact, 9 times out of 10, that at various detox facilities across Scotland, people with addictions and drug dependencies are preyed upon at these venues by drug dealers and by others outside. Time and time again, cases of people selling drugs outside of detox facilities are alcohol, and you know, it just gets these people locked in a loop. And obviously we'll come on to talk about later about, you know, the next steps and, you know, what we see as the you know, the way forward, and looking at the contrast and interest with the interest of the bourgeois. But you know, that ultimate underlining of the fact that it has to be a compassionate approach, and realizing that, you know, these people, you know, it's a very displeasant thing when you think about what people would classify as hardcore drug use, and obviously that's associated with needles, intravenous injections. You know, imagine doing that to yourself time and time again, day in, day out. You know, that takes some toll on a person's body, and you know, that compassionate approach has to be there. So I think you've touched on really well, also in your point there, kind of, well, I was going to come on to talk about looking at safe consumption facilities as part of the wider plan. I think you've touched on that already. So I guess just moving on to, you know, looking at, with the situation being as bad as it is, and the solutions for us, you know, seemingly straightforward, why has the crisis seemingly continued for so long? Even though we can recognize these various trends in drug dependency and the relation to, you know, different aspects across Scotland, why has it been allowed to continue for so long?
I think it purely comes down to disregard for working class interests and maybe some even disorganisation that people aren't even able to, you know, people might be without hope and they're not able to organise a good enough campaign against this epidemic. You know, you had Dr. Macaulay telling the Scottish Affairs Committee in 2019 that the Misuse of Drugs Act in 1971 is a system of classification. It's not based on any evidence related to harms. And there was a 2014 report from the Home Office which acknowledged that the criminal justice approach isn't evidenced. It stated that no obvious relationship between the toughness of a country's enforcement against drug possession and levels of drug use in that country. And so, you know, the senior bodies, they know that the extent to which this problem is, and they know the approach to it. But I think in some aspects, it's the idea of a safe consumption facility for people that haven't been affected by it is it's quite alien to them. It's something they don't want to deal with because it isn't material for them.
Aye, exactly. And like Alex has laid on a really, really important point there. Like it's, there's been a lot of development in, in charities and organizations that deal with this over the last 5, 10 years in terms of that acceptance of safe consumption facilities being part of that wider solution. But the really key thing to note here is that, whether it is people that are using right now, whether it's people that used to use, whether it's friends and families of those that have used, whether it is, potential service users, whether it's, the key decision makers in this, whether that's charities, local councils, academics, anyone else involved in this, there is widespread strong support for the provision of safe consumption facilities. And, it's kind of used as a laughing point over and over again from trade unions, from groups on the left. But, everyone will remember back in 2000 and what was it, seven, the SNP said they'd abolish council tax. And it was back in 2018 that the Scottish Government said they were establishing a strategy and a wider task force to approach the drug deaths issue. Since that time, 2018, that was 7 years ago, drug deaths have only went up. We've got a strategy, we've got a task force, but drug deaths every single year, pretty much on average, have went up since then. This year is one of the highest they've ever been. And that's part of a growing trend. If you go back to the late 90s, the 2000s, drug deaths in Scotland, they averaged maybe 500, 600 a year. In the last decade, they've averaged more closer to 1,200, 1,300. That's over doubling. And as you said, at the start of the question, as Alex has touched on, it's a situation that's so bad and the solutions are seemingly so straightforward. Why is this carried on for so long? And as Alex laid out, the really, really clear, simple answer is class. Drug-related deaths, they're not just a public health crisis, they're a direct result of systemic inequality, that deprivation, that isolation that we've talked about. It's poverty, it's decades of brutal public sector cuts. And, as it's been mentioned, as everyone knows, this is an issue that is really pushed to the sidelines, no matter where it is. When someone dies of an overdose, it's not a CEO, it's not a landlord, it's not your boss. It's a disenfranchised worker who's been abandoned by the system, and a proactive approach to this would actually, it would address poverty, it would address deprivation, and it would address a lack of services. And to me, that's why, as much as there's been a lot of talk, and it's something we've dealt with again and again from the campaign, that pretty much every single politician we speak to is in favour of safe consumption facilities. No one's going to say they're against recovery or they're against harm reduction. Everyone's in favour of it. But actually addressing it requires getting people on the route to recovery. It requires putting back in our local communities, that ability for properly funded council housing, for mental health and for proper healthcare that is well funded and well supported, that is, trade unionised and has really well paying jobs as well, and all of those other services that supports. This is part of a wider struggle. And as you mentioned earlier, it was the budgets this week. I saw over in Glasgow there was hundreds more jobs announced for cleansing workers. In Edinburgh, there was a reverse cut to education. They were proposing a massive, massive cut in high schools and education, and that's been rolled back on. We didn't get the win that we wanted with safe consumption facilities this time, but it's communities and it's trade unions and it's workers fighting back that allows us to have the infrastructure and the communities that will be able to actually solve this problem. But the first material thing that will help the people that are day by day affected by this issue is safe consumption facilities. Again, not to reiterate it, but it's 1,172 people that died last year. If we are any sort of nation that is the sixth richest on earth, if we're any sort of, community, Scotland, Britain, whatever you want to call it, if you want people to stop dying from this issue, the first step of that route is safe consumption facilities. And that task force, that strategy, there's been a lot of people paid a lot of money to lay out a lot of solutions that most folk, if you talk to them in the street, already know about. It's time to actually put that words that are coming out of politicians' mouths into action. And it's already too late because every single delay means further drug deaths.
Yeah, absolutely spot on, and that crucial underpinning of that wider approach and realizing that it's this blatant inequality, that drives this push to drug use, to various dependencies that that occur when we talk about aiding people from their addiction, solid recovery. What is then left for them after they've recovered? What world are they stepping into? They're going to be stepping into a world of continuous financial bondage, you know, that responsibility and pressure to fear from a landlord for getting rent in time, and at the same time hunting for jobs that we're all already fighting each other to get. You know, it's enough to send somebody, you know, back into addiction to relapse, because it's just that harsh. You know, we've kind of touched on the compassionate side of things, but as soon as we step away into the, you know, the quote unquote free market, that compassion, you know, is non-existent. It's just utterly, you know, damaging, and so many people spiral out from that and into homelessness, and, you know, back into addiction. So there has to be, like you're saying, that groundwork, those foundations to actually support people beyond recovery as well, to get that meaningful and full life. And you've touched on it there, kind of, look, Rory, but that agenda from the council. So what can we see as this kind of main agenda from the council and the government, and actually addressing working class issues in Edinburgh, and indeed across Scotland? And why is it so starkly contrasted with bourgeois interests?
Aye, and that's really the central point. That complete contradiction between the needs and the interests of your landlord, your CEO, your boss, whatever you want it to be, is the complete opposite of your interest, of my interest, of the interest of anyone that's affected by this issue. You know, as long as there's people that make, you know, that profit off of this, you know, effective injustice, you know, it's gonna carry on. There's been a lot of talk I've seen in the news kind of recently of, you know, the drugs crisis in Scotland, of safe consumption facilities, because, you know, there is a lot more people talking about it, and it's really, really good. But there's also, you know, there is that recovery, that rehab, whatever you want to call it. There is, you know, a lack of commitment, funding, whatever it is, from councils, from governments. There's a severe lack of rehab beds across Scotland. You know, there's only a few hundreds, and obviously not, you know, it's far from every single person that's affected by this issue needs to, you know, have access to a rehab bed or anything like that. But there is a, you know, a tiny minority of them. And those that are there are a lot of the time only accessed through, you know, private means. That's through paying for it. You know, that a lot of them aren't available in the NHS, and that's due to chronic historical underfunding. A lot of them cost sometimes up to £1,000, £2,000 a week to be able to access those, you know, those facilities, those services. There's a lot of charities, there's a lot of third sector organisations doing a lot of good boots on the ground work in terms of supporting people that are facing this issue. But, you know, that's a sticking plaster over a massive, massive sinkhole. And what we've got is we've got, you know, the rich and powerful in this country who are profiting off of this crisis. You know, thousands every week is spent on. Is spent by people affected on rehab, on recovery, and that money is lining some state, you know, some shareholders' profits, probably on the other side of the world, by the time it actually reaches them. And, you know, it's a class issue at the absolute heart of it. You know, safe consumption facilities, there's evidence from across the world that they, you know, they not only work, but they work really, really well. Particularly so in Portugal, in Vancouver. The one in Vancouver I know had about 3.5 million injections and about 7,000 overdoses in its first decade of opening. There wasn't a single death there. In Lisbon, I know in its first year, pretty much HIV injections dropped by over 90%. But whilst we're in a place where there's people that fund off of these exact things, you know, it's difficult to confront, but it's only through working class organisations that we can confront it. And as I say, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, safe consumption facilities, a proper route to recovery for people affected by this, you know, it wasn't considered by politicians. And, you know, those cuts that we've seen that have got reversed, moves towards safe consumption facilities, greater funding towards council housing that's been achieved by Living Rent and other housing campaigners, that's only been done because of working class organisation. You know, we're only going to save ourselves. And I know Alex can touch on this a lot more.
Well, you covered a lot there, really, but even with the recent opening of the Glasgow SAF, you've seen really positive results where essentially within the first week there were 131 uses of it, with absolutely no medical emergencies at all. And even a spokesperson for the facility said that users had already engaged with housing and drug treatment support after going to it. And so I'll touch on it again. It's about including people back into society and rehabilitating them and saving lives in the end.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. And Cheers, Alex, for kind of underpinning that wee point about engaging with other services as well. Obviously, we kind of touched on the wider aspects of the fact that safe consumption facilities don't just exist for the sake of, you know, consuming drugs. It's about getting those with drug dependencies to engage with other services and, like we said, trying to, you know, help them on that path through recovery and, you know, to establish something out with it as well. So I think that was a great point there. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the kind of political scene surrounding safe consumption, the campaigns, the historical aspect of drug use across Scotland. But I guess just to focus in on your guys's campaign, you know, just to see if you can give us an insight into, you know, the success that your campaign has had so far. Obviously, we've seen the likes of the demonstrations outside chambers, the street stalls, and other things as well. But just if you guys can give us a rundown of, you know, how the campaign's been going.
Xander, I don't know if you want to touch on some of the more recent things, and then I can go back a wee bit further.
So I mean, over the past month, we've sent emails to councillors, we've engaged in street stalls around the city, which have been both been pretty positive. But just this morning, we were outside the city chambers campaigning, and overall, like these sort of street stalls, they do attract a lot of support, and they do gain attract a lot of interest. But overall, it's the councillors that you do really want to be targeting, because these are the people that are in control. But what you will see is strong support from the general public, which is really important. It shows the brevity of this crisis.
Aye, no, and Alex has touched on the key point there. I mean, at the root of the campaign itself, is, you know, it's knowing who to target. It's that basic strategy and analysis of the situation. You know, councillors are important to target because they're the decision makers in this situation. They're the ones that can, you know, effectively turn a lever when they want, when they get the funding to open up a safe consumption facility in Edinburgh. You know, Edinburgh Council going back historically. You know, ever since that Scottish Government strategy and task force back in 2018, there's been an uptick in the calls for safe consumption facilities. There's been a few councillors, not many, on Edinburgh Council specifically, you know, who've kind of raised the issue, who've discussed it, but, you know, there wasn't a lot of movement there for years and years. And it was different people who got the campaign underway. And when the campaign began, it was, you know, that initial demand for a safe consumption facility, the target and the difficulty there, it wasn't seen at the council or the local government level so much. It was actually at the UK government level, you know, going back a few years. And I remember this being a massive political discussion. It was one of those kind of, you know, Scottish government, UK government things where the Scottish government were very much using it as a bit of kind of symbolic rhetoric that they weren't able to, you know, do anything to improve Scotland because of UK government laws. And that was effectively because the, you know, the drug laws in UK mean that, you know, if you're caught consuming them, you're going to be thrown in jail. In a safe consumption facility, you know, if you walk in there, that's obviously going to be the case. Now, through our campaign, and as Xander says, you know, that's through street stalls, which isn't just to raise awareness of the issue. You know, raising awareness is brilliant, but everyone who lives in a community affected by this is aware of the issue. The reason you do street stalls is to also get people on board with a campaign. And it's to prep people for, you know, whether it's council consultations or anything else, but it's to get people involved in the campaign. And a lot of the folk that come to the campaign now, we have a meeting once every month on the last Tuesday of each month. A lot of the people coming along are just people that we maybe bumped into in a street stall, and it's someone that, you know, maybe works in the industry, it's someone affected by the issue, but they are now wanting to get involved because they've seen the success that, you know, working class organisation and structure and, you know, a proper analysis of who to target and how to target them can achieve. As I say, it's the councillors that are going to change this at this point because the UK government or the Scottish government eventually, you know, effectively got a ruling from the justice system that in safe consumption facilities, at least first in Glasgow and probably now from here on out, you know, there isn't going to be anyone criminalised for this issue. They shouldn't have been in the first place, but you know, that was a major success of our campaign, the campaigns that other people have ran, Peter Kraken, as I mentioned, and a lot of others across Scotland. But you know, after that 2018 task force by the Scottish government, I think it was in 2022, 2023, Edinburgh Council, they commissioned a what they called a needs assessment and a feasibility study. Again, a lot of big words and a lot of people being paid a lot of money to come up with them. But they commissioned that study. It was approved by Edinburgh Council after it was released. But a really big thing of the campaign for the past 2 years was that feasibility study. The production of it and the release of it was massively delayed by months and months and months. Edinburgh Council and councillors actually sat on the study, which we now know effectively, really simply showed that not only are safe consumption facilities effective as a base, they would be effective in Edinburgh, but also multiple safe consumption facilities are needed around the city to actually target this issue and get people on the road to recovery. That's what their study showed that they commissioned, and they actually sat on that for months on end until we did a few actions outside different council meetings, the specific committee that kind of oversees it. We got a few councillors that are a wee bit friendly on the inside to push, the effective administration to get that released to the public. And, that's now a massive use to us because Edinburgh Council have commissioned a study that's said that they should do something for the good of its community. And as Alex says, we've now got to a stage where this past month we were fighting to get ring fence funding, effectively guaranteed funding for a safe consumption facility in Edinburgh. We went along to the Finance and Resources Committee, who are pretty much the people who oversee the creation of a local government budget in any city across Scotland. So you can do this next budget wherever you're kind of listening from. But the Finance and Resources Committee, who oversee that budget, they were looking at the final bits and pieces of it. We went along, a member who had turned up to his very first meeting at the end of January said that they were keen to maybe go along, talk to some councillors, and just talk to the councillors about the issue, do a deputation effectively at the council to the committee to state why a safe consumption facility is not only required, as that council report said it was, but also we effectively handed them the answer on a silver platter. There was effectively about 60 million in funding going towards health and social care that could be used towards providing a safe consumption facility. And, the key slogan of our campaign has always been not only save lives, but save money for safe consumption. Save money is a really, really important bit because safe consumption facilities, although the primary key point about them is that it will save lives and it'll get people on the road to recovery, the other thing is they're a money saver. Every single, again, going back to that dollar, that Vancouver example, every single dollar that was spent on that safe consumption facility in Vancouver saved four times the amount of money on healthcare costs into the future. And when we've got that underfunded NHS that is massively under strain, that is absolutely central. Again, going back to it as well, substance misuse is the number one driver towards people going into homelessness in Edinburgh. You start tackling the root of that issue, you start tackling substance abuse, that saves you money, not in the long term, but in the short to medium term. And that's what we presented to the council. And when we went along to that committee, pretty much every single councillor in that room agreed. They sat there, they nodded their heads, they said it was a great idea. They thanked us for how good that deputation was, for how well we spoke, for how good the words were. And that's the same thing we've heard every single time we've went along to the council for the past 2, 3 years. Every single time, everyone is completely in favour of it because no one's going to say they're against recovery. And as Alex says, we went along to the council earlier today, the budget got released, and not a single councillor put forward an amendment, not a single party put forward a budget that included the provision for safe consumption facilities. 2 weeks ago, they were all nodding heads. That comes down to class. That comes down to their interests being in other places. And look, it's not the win that we wanted today, but it shows the importance of working class organisation because we know who the decision makers are and we also know what their interests are. There's a lot of these people that, as a lot of other groups will know, that have interests in being a landlord, that have interests in, being a shareholder and a stakeholder on different kind of private healthcare firms, etc., etc. It's just a wee hump in the way, and it's been delays and delays. And every single delay, as I mentioned earlier, has been, that's further drug deaths. But without working class organisation, we're not going to win this issue. Pretty much every 3 days, someone in Edinburgh dies due to a drug overdose or a drug-related death. And it's only communities that are affected by this getting involved that's going to stop that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Rory. And I mean that kind of point on organising as a class and the likes of through this campaign is really important when you look at the fact that yous are, communicating alongside the trade unions as well. It kind of highlights, and really purposely highlights the fact that majority of workers in Scotland, the vast majority of workers of Scotland are far closer to falling to homelessness or drug use or alcohol misuse than they are reaching that billionaire level status. So it's important that that message is fully brought to the front. And to go off on a wee tangent here, obviously talking about the success, but wondering if you guys have any kind of stories about, you know, difficulties you've faced during the course of the campaign, you know, in the likes of Glasgow here. Obviously we've got the safe consumption facility that's opened in the south side, and that hasn't been without attacks from, you know, the reactionary elements as well, with supposed independent journalists and right-wing hacks such as the likes of Niall Fraser, and when he's not too busy growing out his ginger hair and beard and looking like a wotsit that's fell out a grab bag and rolled under the couch, he's seemingly working to demonise people and attack a service that has been designed for Glasgow's most vulnerable. So just looking to see if you's, you know, have run into kind of problems within your campaign, or, you know, attacks from that reactionary element.
Well, I think where the root of it stems, you touched on dependency. The root of it is the failure of people to realise that these people are physically dependent on a substance. And so moving to that compassionate approach and trying to get people to that compassionate approach is imperative. But in terms of difficulties, the lack of which the council, or the inconsistencies with which the council has addressed us, is probably the main problem, I'd say. Like Rory said, you know, they've nodded their heads when they've seen us in person, but in terms of genuine action, we haven't seen much of it.
Aye, that's exactly it. I mean, you know, any campaign like this, the main difficulty is always going to be the decision maker saying no until they say yes. And that's, you know, that's building. That's not just building on the streets, that's not just building in numbers, but it's, you know, building the campaign till it's at a point where, you know, we win it, and we are going to win it. And aye, as you say, you know, there's a lot of reactionaries that will come after safe consumption facilities. There's a lot of, you know, words that are chucked around about NIMBYs, whatever else, about people that, you know, just don't want these, and, you know, they're in their streets or in their communities or whatever else. But the thing is, you know, every community pretty much across Scotland already has this in their communities. You know, it might not be your family, your friend, but probably someone a few blocks down the street from you is going to be affected by this issue. And, you know, that's that really, really important thing. And that's part of the wider strategy of the campaign as well. You know, when we're out doing flyering, when we're out postering, when we're out doing those street stalls, you know, building that presence in our communities, that's not just important towards building the campaign, but that's also forward planning, because we know that as part of Edinburgh Council's current plans, effectively at the moment, they've got a 6-month project that's being funded between the council and the Edinburgh Alcohol and Drug Partnership, and that's going to end in June. Again, another report pretty much that's going to be given to the council that we already know what it's going to say. It's going to say that safe consumption facilities are effective, that Edinburgh Council should implement them, and that'll be another 6 months of action not being taken. But that 6-month project's going on, and part of that is going to be community consultations, and that's, you know, going to involve people with lived experience, but it's probably also going to involve wider kind of public consultation as well. And anyone that's been through kind of, you know, consultations, whether it's for the Scottish Government, whether it's from councils, you know, it's a complete falsity of democracy. You know, the only people that are engaged in those processes are usually people that know about them from the start. You know, the people that are actually affected by this issue, they are not going to log into the council's website and go through a bunch of technical questions, you know, to say what they already know. But these consultations, they are important because they give the councils the proof, the demand for these things to be implemented. And also what we've seen, particularly in the housing sector recently, is the Scottish Government and Edinburgh Council are getting really, really wary of legal attacks by a lot of these different reactionary groups in whatever form they're organised into. And, you know, safe consumption facilities, you know, very well might not be any different from that. So it's also those consultations are important to ward off those kind of legal attacks as well. But every single poster that we put up, every single bit of flyering that's done, but most importantly, every single street stall that we do, every single person that we speak to, you know, that's another person. It's not just about raising awareness, but it's contacts that are gained that will get involved in the campaign and we can come back to when that community consultation's underway to ensure that the decision makers hear what communities are very much already aware of. And as I kind of touched on earlier, another key issue is, you know, it's around that funding. The you know, as I think Alex has touched on again and again, the people that are affected by this issue, what they've seen for the last 1, 2, 5, 10, 15, 20 years has been the services that were once in place. That's not just the NHS, that's, you know, substance misuse services, it's addiction services. Their funding's got pulled, their funding's got scrapped. A lot of them aren't here anymore, and a lot of the ones that are here just now probably won't be here in 5 years' time. And that funding's going to be a really, really key issue for the safe consumption facility in Glasgow and in Edinburgh as well. Because if it is stocked by volunteers, as the one is in New York, what you get is massive burnout. You don't get proper, kind of that professionalized expertise that you need in these services. If you run it through the third sector, through the charity, who again do massively impressive and commendable kind of on the ground work at the moment, supporting people affected by this issue. What you get if you hand it to a third sector is realistically in 2, 3, 4 years' time is the funding's going to be cut. You know, we can't rely on local governments to keep that funding up for third sector organisations, and the Scottish government, I should say, to keep those funding up for third sector organisations. So what we need to ensure as a safe consumption facility is that's publicly owned. So there's a democratic mandate from the people to ensure that it is, you know, it stays where it needs to be, and that it's not only properly funded, but the people that are running it, you know, are well remunerated for the incredibly intense and commendable work that they're doing. So that funding, that forward planning, those are key issues that, you know, we're working on. And further past that, just as I've touched on previously, and as you've mentioned, Nathan, like the working class organization is absolutely key of it. You know, every single person that comes into this campaign, they're not only, you know, getting themselves and getting their communities one step closer towards a safe consumption facility, but every single step of that way, you know, they're learning about strategy, they're learning about action, they're learning about if you want to change something in your community, if you want to make something better, whether it's housing, whether it's your wages, there's people that make those decisions. And they usually have, you know, interests that work against yours. It's identifying those things, it's how to build a campaign, get people involved, learning the strategy, doing street stalls to get more people involved, or in your workplace talking to your work colleagues. And as you've mentioned, a really key part of the campaign has been that work that we've done with trade unions. A lot of the people involved in the campaign are good trade unionists. A few, I think it was 2 years ago, we got a motion that went to the Scottish Trade Union Congress, and the Scottish Trade Union Congress voted overwhelmingly, nearly unanimously, in favour of fighting for safe consumption facilities as well. So the support we've got from, you know, workers from trade unions has been really, really important, and it's building that solidarity to show that, you know, this isn't just an individual fight. Safe consumption facilities aren't the only part of the solution, but the strength and the structure that we build through that is how we improve our communities and how we improve this country as a whole.
Yeah, super great rundown there. And I guess just jumping on to the next point, we've kind of highlighted some of the things happening in Glasgow compared to Edinburgh. Glasgow certainly running with a pilot scheme for the safe consumption facility. So how do the kind of issues in your campaign declare sorry, compare to the likes of Glasgow's?
Aye, so as I think Alex mentioned earlier, and you know, this is the thing about every single safe consumption facility around the world. There's a lot of different models for it, and the reason for that isn't because they're implemented differently. It's because the implementation needs to be different. The outlook in Glasgow, due to the different types of drugs that are used, and also the different locations of where drugs used between Edinburgh and Glasgow, is really important. As I think Alex touched on earlier, Edinburgh's got really high levels of opioid use. Kind of benzodiazepine use, you know, historic heroin as well, and then also cocaine injection is really just through the roof at the moment. But really centrally, the big difference between Glasgow and Edinburgh, and I've, you know, heard a few people kind of critique the Glasgow model because it's maybe not got the uptick or use that it should have got, and you know, that's just a reality of it being in place for the first wee bit of time. You know, the more that's known in communities, and that's, you know, the people that actually experience this, the more that that's spread about, the more people start using it. That will take time to start, but the drug use in Glasgow, it's a lot more spread out across different communities and across geographic regions as well. And that's why the really important thing that the report that Edinburgh Council, you know, agreed to, you know, commissioned and then agreed to, was that multiple safe consumption facilities are needed in Edinburgh. But the key thing for us is that it is a lot more condensed in Edinburgh. Pretty much a lot of drug-related deaths, they happen in the Old Town, which, if you don't know, Edinburgh is pretty much the historic city centre down on the Cowgate. I was about to say the Gallowgate, down on the Cowgate, birthplace of James Connolly, as I'm sure a lot of people know. And that's been, it's not just the centre for kind of Edinburgh nightlife, but it's also, again, where even alongside that nightlife, alongside a lot of tourism, it's where a lot of working class people still live and work. And it is really run down, it is massively deprived, and that kind of housing and healthcare shot down. And then Leith as well is a massive hotspot, and then kind of outside Wester Hills, Sight Hill. So it's still spread about a wee bit, but the really key thing is there's a key hotspot in the city centre. And again, due to that decent public transport, a lot of the areas that are also hotspots are relatively good public transport routes. And the key ones for us are Old Town and Leith. Our campaign is kind of based out of Leith. Our meetings are always at Leith Community Centre, and that's where a lot of our members are based. But that means a safe consumption facility would have a lot more of an immediate, noticeable, tangible effect than the one in Glasgow has. The one in Glasgow will do, and it'll continue to build, and it'll continue to do well, especially when more are set up. But in Edinburgh, the really key thing is that it would have a more immediate, noticeable effect due to the drug crisis being more condensed around the city centre, on main public transport routes, and in less kind of spread out areas than Glasgow.
Yeah, no, terrific. I think that's a great rundown looking at the kind of comparisons, and they're really important to see that it's not just the same approach everywhere, as it's sometimes laid out to be. So I think that's a great point to highlight. And I guess following on from that then is, Alex, you've obviously touched on with a number of points the kind of social issues surrounding drug use dependency and everything, and your guys' campaign and the success that you have had following some of your recent actions. So just looking to see, what are the next steps for you, and I guess the wider resolution for tackling this drug crisis?
So we're still looking at councillors trying to identify locations for this. They have been fairly slow in trying to identify numerous locations in the city, whether to use older buildings or whether to build new ones. But we will continue to campaign. We will continue to provide deputations, conduct street stalls, and entice more people into our meetings because it's imperative that we do. If we, if we back down an inch, they'll, I'm sure the council would love to forget about it. So, we will continue to campaign passionately about this cause.
Aye, exactly as Alex has put it. The campaign carries on, the work carries on, the hard graft that people put in every day towards the campaign carries on as well. And that's not directionless, it's strategic towards those, as Alex says, identifying the councillors that we need to come round on the issue, and whether that's in a friendly or a not so friendly way, identifying what their interests are and how to influence that. And it's through an understanding the next step of the campaign is that kind of 6 month project that the Edinburgh Alcohol and Drug Partnership are running. In some ways it's a bit of a farce because it's another report that will produce the same results as before, but it's important to that communities in the campaign have a say in that project as well. So that's getting people involved in the campaign, but it's also building towards that community consultation that will happen, and also just moving towards getting a safe consumption facility brick and mortar. As Alex says, there's a lot of kind of chat at the moment within that project of where the location will be, and they're very much looking at kind of the cheapest option at the moment, but in some ways that's also the easiest option of existing council-owned buildings where there's already a kind of drug service or a healthcare service already in place there. And what that means is that when we get to the stage that we're kind of underway, we're getting a safe consumption facility up and running, is it won't be as slow as the Glasgow process will. It will probably be an existing building that's used. It will be a building that already has some kind of kind of professional systems and structure in place, and it's ensuring that at that point that the proper staffing's there, that it's not just completely medicalised, it's not just completely professionalised, but as we said earlier, really, really key, it's compassionate. People need to feel like they can actually come into these buildings. People need to feel like they can come into these buildings, receive the support that they need, but also just be able to use them, have a friendly face there, but also that the that other side of that friendly face is well paid, that these are trade union jobs that should be there. So it's important for folk to get involved. If you're not in Edinburgh, there's community groups fighting on this all across the country. If there isn't, start building one just now, when our campaign's always happy to talk to anyone across the entirety of Scotland that's key to get underway on this issue. But if you're in Edinburgh, if you're in the Lothians, come along to our next campaign meeting. They're the last Tuesday of every month. The next one in February is on the 25th. And that's always in Leith Community Centre at 6:30 last Tuesday of every month. And you come along, you can do whatever will be useful towards the campaign, whether you want to get out in street stalls and start chatting to your community and building up this issue, whether you want to go along to a council meeting or a committee meeting or something like that and, tell the council exactly how you feel about the issue. You'll get the structure and support you need to do that. Because no one else is going to come along to fix this issue. We need to do the work and we need to put in the work to stop our communities further depriving, further dying, and getting people on the route to the place that they should be.
Yeah, no, cheers for that, guys. And I guess just to wrap things up, any final talking points from yourself, and most importantly, whereabouts can we find you on social media and keep up to date with the campaign work?
Well, I would say that safe consumption facilities, they're proven to be effective. They're proven to be the starting point of how to tackle a drug epidemic. This has been proven all around the world, and nowhere else needs it more than Scotland. Every city needs a safe consumption facility to prevent deaths and, stop the fact that we have the highest drug death rate in Europe.
Aye, exactly that. And get along to our next campaign meeting if you're in Edinburgh. As I said, that's the last Tuesday of each month at Leith Community Centre. And you can get us on most social medias at Safe Consumption Facility Edinburgh or just Safe Consumption Edinburgh on most social medias as well.
Yeah, no, cheers for that, guys. Again, it's been an absolute pleasure to, have you on the show today to talk about, what's a very important campaign, and with the likes of these council budget meetings happening, it's very important to highlight this, disparity that continues to grow across councils, not just in Edinburgh, but indeed Glasgow, West of Scotland, and everywhere else in between, that there's conscious choices being made, and those are choices that are detrimental to our class. So with campaigns like this, focusing obviously on the safe consumption facility, but looking at the wider, social economic aspects behind it, with the likes to housing, job security, and everything else in between, and even looking at the safe consumption facilities as being, jobs that have to exist for longevity, and they have to be secure and, proper. I think that really highlights at home. So I, again, just want to thank you for coming on.
No, that's exactly it, Nathan. And thank you for having us on as well. Spectre's part of that, very important, collective that, actually speaks for the working class and, not just our campaign, but different trade unions, different community groups, different campaigns across the country that need to be heard so that people can hear that, a better world is possible and it's only built if you get out onto the streets and build it. So thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thanks, comrades, for tuning in to another episode of Spectre. As always, be sure to leave us a like or review on whatever platform you're listening in from. Since the 25th of the 5th, 2023, the Safe Consumption Edinburgh campaign has continued to analyse a path forward and how to win their demands. Harm reduction measures must be implemented in the City of Edinburgh if they're going to save lives. The campaign aims to secure the creation of a safe consumption facility or facilities in Edinburgh. An SCF is a place where people struggling with drug addiction and dependency can safely administer drugs under the supervision of trained staff. Drug deaths in Scotland have reached an all-time high and continue to grow, with Edinburgh being one of the most affected areas. Every single year, too many families are devastated by the tragedy of drug deaths. SCFs themselves have been proven to greatly diminish the risk of overdose and death, whilst also serving as a pathway for those suffering from addiction to contact and communicate with other services to provide them a life outside of addiction. It's an absolute necessity that the City of Edinburgh Council, along with other affected council areas, take immediate action on this issue. These councils must develop concrete plans for the implementation of SCF facilities. And although the drug crisis continues to rise, it's been largely ignored and diminished by Westminster, the Scottish Government, and local councils. If you're an Edinburgh resident and look to fight back for your community and for your most vulnerable, then join the SCF Edinburgh campaign and help them tackle this crisis in Edinburgh to save lives, save money, and save consumption.